忘れまや忘れまやバグバチェイバスレイバヤ
October 9th, 2019 in Silver Street, London, England, and we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Text 43 and 44.
Nityada Yanga Bhutani Bhavantina Bhavanti Cha
Bhavantina Bhavanti Cha
Kalena Lakshya Vegena
Kalena Lakshya Vegena
Shukshma Tvattam Nadrishyate
Shukshma Tvattam Nadrishyate
Nityada Constantly
He
Indeed Anga
My dear Uddhava
Bhutani created bodies bhavanti
come into being
na bhavanti
go out of being
cha
and
kalena
by time
alakshya imperceptible
vegena
whose speed
shukshma
tvat
because of being very subtle
tat
that
Nadrishyati
is not seen.
Translation. My dear Uddhava, material bodies are constantly undergoing creation and destruction by the force of time, whose swiftness is imperceptible, but because of the subtle nature of time, no one sees this. Text 45. The different stages of transformation of all material bodies occur just like those of the flame of a candle, the current of a river, or the fruits of a tree. Purport. The wavering flame of a candle sometimes waxes brightly and again becomes weak. Finally, it vanishes altogether. The waves of a flowing river rise and fall, creating innumerable shapes and patterns. The fruits of a tree gradually take birth, grow, ripen, sweeten, and eventually rot and die. Similarly, one can easily understand that one's own body is undergoing constant transformation, and that the body is certainly subject to old age, disease, and death. At different times of life, the body exhibits degrees of sexual potency, physical strength, desire, wisdom, and so on. As the body grows old, physical strength diminishes, but one's knowledge may increase, even as the body undergoes such transformation. Material birth and death occur even within the realm of segmented time. The birth, creation, or production of a material object immediately connects it with a segmented sequence of subtle time. Within the material world, thus its destruction or death is inevitable. The irresistible force of time moves so subtly that only the most intelligent can perceive it. Just as the candle flame gradually diminishes as the flowing currents move within the river or as fruits gradually ripen on a tree, the material body is steadily moving towards inevitable death. The temporary body should therefore never be confused with the eternal, unchanging spirit soul. My dear Uddhava, material bodies are constantly undergoing creation and destruction by the force of time, whose swiftness is imperceptible, but because of the subtle nature of time, no one sees this. The different stages of transformation of all material bodies occur just like those of the flame of a candle, the current of a river, or the fruits of a tree. So we used to have a drama that we would perform. In the early days of ISKCON, we used to do a lot of philosophical dramas at the Sunday feast, and sometimes out on the street. We did a lot of street theater, especially in New York. Russell Gill and Louis Talkshow especially would do that. But one of our plays was The Wrong Bank Account. And I must admit that when I was newly in ISKCON, I didn't understand this drama at all. Couldn't make heads or tails out of it. So you may know that you can put money in anybody's account. You all know that? You can't take money out of others' account, but you can put money in anyone's account. So if you know the bank and their account number, you can deposit money in their account. And this is true pretty much in every bank all over the world. So it's very easy to put some money into someone else's account. So there was this man who was very diligent about saving his money for retirement. And every time he got a paycheck, he would go to the bank and he would deposit some of his money into an account. But somehow he had one of the numbers wrong, and he was not actually depositing it into his own account. And when it came time to retire, and he went to collect his money, he found out that he had been putting the money into the wrong bank account. So who we think we are is very important in this world. Right? We know in our modern technological age that just getting one number or one letter wrong makes a big difference, doesn't it? Right? One time I purchased a plane ticket. And when you purchase a plane ticket online, you put in your email address. So the airline sends you a confirmation. I wasn't getting any confirmation. And then I realized that I had put in one letter wrong in my email address. I put C-O-N instead of C-O-M. And so I had to call the airline and try to get it adjusted. If we make a little mistake about who we are, then everything we're doing is going in the wrong bank account. This fact is very clear in the story of Kaliya. When Krishna's wrapped in the coils of Kaliya, one of the few leelas where everybody is there. Generally, like, you know, we have reference in the Nectar of Instruction to the Astakalila Leela, the eightfold pastimes that happen every day. And so of those eight pastimes, two of them, Krishna's focus on his parents, the elders, and somewhat on the boys. Two just on the boys, and two just on the girls. So he's not generally with everybody all together. I mean, when Krishna leaves for the forest in the morning, and when he comes back in the evening, pretty much everybody's there, but the forest creatures are not there. So he's leaving the forest. It's explained like the deer and the squirrels and the forest creatures and the trees. You know, they're crying that Krishna's going into the village, and when Krishna goes from the village to the forest, all the villagers are crying. There's a wonderful description in Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Mother Yasoda sending Krishna to the forest and how difficult it is for her. You know, like you may see someone at an airport where they say goodbye, and then they say goodbye again, and then they say goodbye again, and then they say goodbye again, and finally the security guard says, "Ma'am, you've got to move your car," right? So Mother Yasoda is going up over and over again to say goodbye to Krishna. Anyway, generally, everybody isn't together, but in the Kaliya Leela, except for Rohini, who Balaram convinced to stay back and cook for everybody, everybody came to see Krishna in the Yamuna, in the coils of Kaliya. And it's explained by Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book that the residents had invested everything in Krishna. And so when they saw Krishna was about to die, they were going to die. You know, how do we feel when someone, something, some idea that we've invested in shakes? Like in the stock market crash in 1929, people were jumping out of the window. Huh? People invested all their money in the stocks, and now their stocks weren't worth anything anymore, and they thought, my life is over. I can't live as a poor person. I'll jump out the window. There's a big problem in India with farmers who buy hybrid seeds, and they buy machinery like tractors, and then their harvest fails, and they can't pay off their debt, and they commit suicide. It's a very big and very growing problem. I was reading the other day, there's one river where there's so many dead bodies falling in this river from these farmers committing suicide. It's become a big problem for the local municipality. So people have everything invested in something, and when it falls apart, they fall apart. You know, sometimes a person commits murder after a divorce. You know this? Right? You've heard about this? So the guy's wife says, "I'm finished with you. You know, you're a creepazoid. I want nothing to do with you anymore. I'm taking the kids. I'm out of here." And he goes and shoots her and shoots the kids. You've read of this yet? Or the other way, she shoots him, shoots the kids. Why? Because they've invested everything. I've invested everything into my family. If my family rejects me, then I'm finished. They kill their family, they kill themselves. Yes, everybody's heard about this kind of thing happening. So who we think we are is not of no consequence. This concept of who am I? Srila Prabhupada one time asked the devotees, how do you start your preaching? And they said, well, we try to convince people there's a God. He said, no, first convince them that you're not this body. So who do I think I am? What's my identity is going to determine where I invest my energies. Yes? And so this point is being made over and over and over again. Who are you? What is my identity? So here Krishna is explaining to Uddhava what we're not. We're not something that's constantly changing. And we have the Sanskrit, bhavanti na bhavanti cha. Bhavanti na bhavanti cha. It's existing and it's not existing both. Both existing and not existing. Coming into existence, not coming into existence. When my father and my husband and I were, and my son were meeting with Prabhupada in Philadelphia in 1975, and my father had been really taking up Krishna consciousness, so he felt that his life was being very positively transformed by his Krishna conscious practice. So he asked Srila Prabhupada, and my father was just beaming. I mean, he was just so full of joy. He had gone on the morning walk with Prabhupada that morning. That was the day I got second initiation. That morning, Prabhupada had given the lecture and given the first initiates had gotten their names and their beads. My father had been there. And before that, my father had gone on the morning walk with Prabhupada. The day before, we'd all gone on the Rath Yatra. And so we were meeting with Prabhupada that morning, I don't know, like maybe 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. And my father handed Prabhupada a check for life membership. And my father was just absolutely radiant. And he said to Srila Prabhupada, is it possible that we can be reborn in the same body? And what my father was thinking of was spiritual rebirth. But Srila Prabhupada took it another way. And he said, yes, we are all being reborn at every moment. The body is constantly changing. Our identity was constantly changing. I once read an essay by this man, long story, but he had had a interesting kind of jettison into Brahman realization. And he said one of the things that he realized was that the material identity was constantly being recreated at every moment, that there was no substance to the material identity whatsoever. Our mind, our personality, our body, he could actually perceive that it was being recreated every moment, every moment, every moment. And the comparison is being given here to what? What were the analogies that Krishna gave? Right, the candle. We see it's one flame, but is it one flame? Is it the same flame from moment to moment to moment? Is it actually the same flame? It's flickering, but not only flickering, is it the same flame? No, it's burning different parts of fuel, yes? Different parts of fuel, different parts of the wick. And so it's actually a different flame moment to moment. Or the river, is it the same river? No, it's constantly changing. Right? The water that's in the river is constantly changing. I mean, the personality of the river is the same. All rivers have some personality that governs them. But the river water itself is constantly changing. And in the same way, our material identity is constantly changing. I mean, we talk a lot about how the physical body is constantly changing. I give this example all the time. If we took baby pictures of everyone in this room, if we had a contest, you know, and we put them up on the wall, and we said, match the pictures with the baby pictures with the adults, would we be able to do that? Would we be able to do that? 50-50. 50, you think so, huh? We can try that and give out plates of Mahaprasadamas prizes. It's very difficult to match the baby picture with the picture of the adult body. Or if you've ever, you know, seen pictures of your grandparents' wedding or something, and you're like, who are those people? Right? They don't look the same. Or there's a photograph that was in Back to Godhead of myself, my husband, and our two oldest children on the roof of the 55th Street Temple in New York City. And I remember showing that several times this happened, that I showed the picture to people, and they said, where are you in that picture? You know, I was 25 at the time. It was, where are you in that picture? So it's a different body. It's not that the baby body just got pumped up like a balloon or something. You know, it's an entirely different body. Every cell in the body has changed, and at every moment, every moment, every moment, every moment, it's a different body. And what about our mind? Have we changed our we say, I've changed my mind, yeah? How many times in our life or in a day do we change our mind? Oh, I really want this. And then we get it, we go, you know, I actually don't want it. Have you done that? You know, we're at a meal, whoa, give me the biggest piece. And then you're like, you know, I can't finish it. Well, what do I do with it? I've changed my mind. I had people change their mind. They changed their mind about their spouse. I thought you loved me. Oh, well, I changed my mind. You know, they changed their mind about their job. Right? People go from liberal to conservative and conservative to liberal, isn't it? They change their religion. They change their job. They change their political affiliation. Maybe they change what football team they route for. And what about the thoughts in our mind? Aren't those always changing? Sometimes, you know, we're obsessed with some thoughts, right? Do we sometimes get obsessed with certain thoughts? Oh, this happened. What about this? What about this? What about this? And then, you know, the day before we weren't obsessed with those thoughts. And 2 days later we're not obsessed with those thoughts. I'm sure we can all remember getting in some big argument with somebody, but we can't remember what the argument is about was about. Yes? Does everyone have this kind of thing where you remember, oh my God, I got in such a big fight. We were yelling at each other. What was it about? I don't remember. So our mind is always changing. Our thoughts are always changing. What about our emotions? Whoa. How many emotional states do we go through in a day? Can we remember a time that we were very angry, but we're not very angry right now? Everybody's been angry at some point in their life? Yeah, you can remember a time that you were angry. Maybe it was this morning, or maybe it was yesterday. But are you feeling that anger right now? Maybe not. Maybe you're not feeling any anger. Hopefully none of you are feeling any anger right now. But you know, we may be just totally peaceful. Oh, I'm so happy. You know, 2 hours ago we may have been furious. Isn't it like that? And maybe, you know, maybe at breakfast somebody will insult us and we'll become furious again. Right now it seems inconceivable. I'm not going to be furious at 10 o'clock in the morning, but we might be. And whatever state we're in, we think, that's me. You know, I am angry. I'm angry. We even say, I am, like it's who I am. You know? I am happy. And then our bodily state. Sometimes we're really tired. Right? Sometimes we're so tired that we just can't force ourselves to stay awake, isn't it? You know, if you ever tried doing the nirjala and a cut, today's a codicy. So if anybody does the nirjala where they stay up all night, so I used to do that all the time. And at about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, you'd be like, okay, cold water on the face, take a walk outside. But I don't feel that way right now. Maybe some of you do because I'm boring you to death. This guy's, he's going. Sorry, I'm not entertaining enough. But it's like that, you know, sometimes we're exhausted and we can't stay awake no matter what. And other times, right, we're wide awake and we can't go to sleep. Yes? Isn't it? You're lying in bed trying to go to sleep, but can't go to sleep, can't go to sleep, can't go to sleep. And other times, can't stay awake, can't stay awake, can't stay awake. Sometimes we're ravenously hungry. Sometimes we're full. You know, so our bodily states are always changing, isn't it? And we're thinking at the moment, I am hungry. I am. I am happy. I am sad. I am hungry. I am tired. So this changing thing, bhavanti na bhavanti cha, cannot be our identity. How can it be our identity? Which identity is it? Am I the angry or am I the joyful? Am I the exhausted or am I the alert? who am I? It's a very different I, isn't it? Isn't it a very different I, the angry I and the happy I? Yeah? Aren't we almost like a different person? Yes? Everyone's been angry in their life, yes? Am I correct? Everyone's experienced anger? Everyone's experienced joy, I hope? Which I? It's really different. You know, am I the I that had this really strong opinion on this issue, or am I the I that had a really strong opposite opinion on this issue? Which I am I? And therefore, the Buddhists say, I don't exist. There is no I. Because they're just looking at this constant change, and they say, who is the self? Who is the identity? Then what to speak of another life? Dehi nos minyata dehe kamaram yovanam dra tata dehantara praptir dhiras tatra muyate. Then who's the I? It's a very different I. A very different concept of ego in another life. You know, those of us who can remember other lifetimes, that was a very different ego. You know, then instead of thinking, you know, I'm a white American woman, I'll think, well, I'm a, you know, brown Indian man. And they have a whole different set of mental processes. A whole different, everything is completely different. So who is that I? And what are we investing into? Are we investing into that I that's always changing? What a strange kind of investment. Like imagine throwing your money into a flowing river. Would that work very well? Well, that's gone. And we find actually how that happens in our life, isn't it? How many of us are still friends with the people from our childhood? How many of those childhood friends do we still keep up with? This is true for most people. It's not just because we join the Hare Krishnas. You know, there's not that many people who really are close to their childhood friends or their teenage friends. But there was a time when that was our most important investment, wasn't it? You know? Especially when we were just hitting puberty and we really cared what everybody thought about us. That was the most important thing on the planet. But I don't even remember those people's names anymore. But how much did I invest in that? How much time and energy did I invest in trying to please and trying to impress the other people in my 6-year class? Or my teachers. I don't remember all my teachers' names. Do you remember all your teachers' names? And I was working so hard to do that assignment, to do that project. I was investing so much in pleasing them. I don't even remember who they are anymore. Just throwing something into a constantly moving river. And the body and mind are so demanding, aren't they? Aren't they really demanding? And it just doesn't stop. It's not like, feed me, okay, I feed you, and now you should be happy. Feed me again. Buy this for me, okay, I bought this for you. Oh, now I want this. You know, the body and mind is like a really spoiled child. You know, like a really entitled person, isn't it? Am I the only one with this problem? You know, my body and mind are constantly making demands on me. Pay attention to this. This is really, really, really important. Put down your japa beads and think about this. Okay. What are we investing in? Yeah? So, but it's not all hopeless. Because, thankfully, we have Srila Prabhupada, Nirvisay Sushunyavadi Paskatyavashita, that he came and said, hey, you're not nothing. Materialistic people who think that they're this identity, have some real existential anxiety all the time. How are you going to be happy when you're throwing your money into a river? How is it? And everybody knows this on some level, isn't it a fact? Everybody knows on some level that everything I'm investing in is false. That's why they're all at the pubs at night, doing their own tamagun harinam. We hear them out the window. That's why they're doing that. That's why they're taking drugs and alcohol. Not just drugs and alcohol. We have a lot of electronic intoxication nowadays, too. There's a place I pass going to Tottenham Station that says the escape room. You've all seen that sign? For video games. Go downstairs. I thought, of course, it's got to be downstairs, right? You know, that's it. I want to forget. I want to forget that I'm throwing my money into a flowing river. I don't want to face it. It's painful. It's scary. So, you know, let me just... The average time the American watches TV is 6 hours a day, which I don't understand that. Just, like, how do you work? I know they don't cook. I don't know. They don't cook. Maybe they don't clean their house. I don't know. But how do you spend average? I mean, some people are spending 10, 15 hours a day watching television. And it's the same like alcohol or drugs. Let me forget. Or being really, 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 really busy. You know, the workaholic. 70 hours a week, 80 hours a week. On my phone when I'm home all the time, working. But Prabhupada gave us an alternative, that there's something different, that we are something else, and that we can invest in that something else. But this something else is shukshma. It's very subtle. Word shukshma means also very fine. It's a very subtle thing. In fact, the anxiety we feel about throwing our money into a flowing river is a subtle indication that I am something other than all these identities. If, as the Buddhists say, I wasn't anything else, then I'd be fine. Because there wouldn't be any I not to be fine. And if, as the mechanistic scientists say, I'm nothing but this changing temporary identity, I'd also be fine with that. If I was just a mechanical thing, I mean, the table's fine with the fact that it used to be a tree body and it's eventually going to become dust. It doesn't have a problem with that, a mechanical thing, right? When you go to turn off your computer, when you do the, you know, shutdown, does your computer go, no, stop! Don't shut me down! Because, you know, I'm not a mechanical being. The evidence that I'm something other than these changing identities is that I'm not satisfied with these changing identities. I do have this existential angst about having a material identification. That's a strong piece of evidence that I'm not that. If I was that, I'd be fine with it. Even within the false identity, I feel more comfortable being what my temporary nature is, and I feel comfortable acting as someone else's nature, isn't it? So my general lack of comfort with the material identity is indicative that I have another identity. It's very subtle. And the main evidence, okay, that I'm not happy with the changing identity, it brings fear and anxiety. Another evidence is that I can remember these things. Although the mind has changed, I can remember when I had a different political opinion. I can remember before I could talk, my mother talking to the servant and ignoring me and feeling upset. And I remember my thoughts and pictures. I can remember that. I can remember that I was there. I can remember taking that photograph on the roof of the 55th Street Temple. So I have some continuing sense of identity. I have some continuing sense that's not affected by this changing bodies. And even if I don't remember, other people will remember. I know a devotee, I don't know if I ever told the story here, but he was visiting the temple and he wanted to surrender to Krishna, but he didn't want to surrender to Krishna. I don't think that happens just before we move in to ISKCON. I think that keeps happening to some extent, yes? So he kind of wanted to surrender and didn't want to surrender. And he saw the picture of Nrisimhadev, and he didn't know much about Krishna consciousness at the time, so he didn't really know who that was. And always be careful when you pay to learn Nrisimhadev. He does major surgery. So he prayed to him and he said, please arrange my life so that I surrender. The next thing he knew, it was a week later, and he was lying on the side of the road with total amnesia. The only thing he knew was that he was supposed to go to a Hare Krishna temple. That was all he knew. He couldn't remember his name, his family, anything at all. Nothing. And he lived in the LA temple for a couple years, took initiation, and finally his guru said, you should try to remember. So he actually got some treatments and stuff. And he said eventually he was able to remember everything except the week between his prayer to Nrisimhadev and lying on the side of the road. He never regained that week. But even at the time that he forgot everything, other people remembered him. You know, once he remembered who he was, then his parents said, oh yeah, you're the same person. There's evidences that we have an unchanging identity. And the other evidence that, of course, we give all the time is that we're conscious of our own identity. Matter is not conscious of its own existence. I mean, Krishna is conscious of it. So sarva kalamidam brahma, everything is spiritual in the sense that Krishna is conscious of the existence of matter from within the matter, not conscious of it the way I'm conscious of this table by looking at it. But the table is not conscious of itself. But I have an awareness that I exist. Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. But, you know, even entities that really don't do much of anything we could call thinking, like plants, have some awareness of their identity. So I have some conscious awareness. And I want things that are not available to a material identity. Like, you'd like to be able to not only sleep when you wanted to, right? I assume you don't want to be sleeping right now. I want that. I want to be able to be awake and alert whenever I want to be. I want to be awake and alert maybe all the time, if I could. I would like to not be controlled by eating. Wouldn't everybody like to not be controlled by eating and sleeping and mating and defending? Wouldn't that be nice if those things didn't shove us around? And I'd like to be happy all the time. I don't really like being angry and grieving and fearful. I don't really like that. They come whether I like them or not, but I don't really like them. And I'd like to be able to see things as they are instead of seeing things in illusion. I'd like that. And I'd like not just to be happy all the time. I'd like that happiness all the time to be like boundless and increasing. Does everybody want those things? Am I alone, or is other people like, oh, I just want to be sad and angry and hungry and tired? But we want these things that they're not available in this body. It's just not available. You know, good luck. Make a lot of money, buy a big mansion, have 10 servants and Rolls Royces. And, you know, marry the most attractive person on the planet and have really, you know, healthy, intelligent kids who go to Oxford and get your name in the newspaper, and you still don't get those things. Right? It's just not available materially. Even on the higher planets, it's not available. Indra doesn't have that. Indra's like, they've offended me. You know, they don't get it. Or, I want that Earth woman. You know, he's got all these heavenly women. Why does he want an earth woman? So even Indra doesn't have this. Even on the higher planets. The fact that we want something that's not available materially. Abrahma bhuvanaloka punarvati arjuna mama pejit kunte punarjanmayam vijite. We go all the way to Lord Brahma's planet. He doesn't even have it. It's explained in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He touched some foam and the demon appeared and he got afraid and he ran away. He wouldn't come back. Lord Vishnu's like, come back, come back. He's like, no. So the fact that we want something that's not available here is strongly indicative. It's strong evidence that I don't belong here. Yes? You know, you take the, with the examples always given, you take the fish out of water and it can't breathe. You know, I go into water and I can't breathe. A fish can breathe in water. It's meant to breathe in water. But if I go into water, I suffocate. If the fish comes out of water, it suffocates. It's an indication that we're in a foreign environment, wanting something that you can't get. So we're in a foreign environment of this identification with the body. So where are we going to invest? Now, we have to take some care of our body. That can't be helped. But we don't have to take care of our body as our identity. And all of our problems come from identifying with the body instead of the self. All of them. Why would I feel offended and angry and fearful at somebody insulting me or somebody threatening me or whatever if I didn't identify with the body and mind? Who are they insulting and threatening, whatever? Not me. Why would I have any worry about anything in this world if I didn't identify with the body and mind? Because all of the troubles in this world have to do with that identity. Why would it disturb me? Dearest Tatpadmuyite, if you're sober, right, then it's not a disturbance. And Krishna explains that this mentality is actual freedom from all miseries arriving from material contact. You know, I think I'm going to get free from all miseries by just having, you know, a perpetually healthy, youthful body and a few million pounds in the bank and everybody loving me in my circle of people. I think that's how I'm going to get free of material miseries. But I'm going to get free of material miseries by changing my identification. I'm not going to worry about the river if my money's not in it. Why would I worry? Go to a river and see it flowing. I'm not going to go, oh my God, the river's flowing. Why do I care? Yeah, the river flows. Okay, fine. I'm standing on the bank looking at it. So if I identify as myself, then I'm going to be peaceful and joyful. And we're not just identifying with the self as I'm spiritual. In just a general way. That's not enough for us. Now, we're not satisfied just with some general idea of I'm spiritual. And therefore, those who have Brahman realization don't generally stay there. Avasuddha Buddhaya, they generally come back to material activities. I mean, Prabhupada talked about persons he was aware of in India who were Mayavadi sannyasis, who said, I've experienced Brahman. And then they start doing philanthropy in the world. And he said, if they've experienced Brahman, why are they trying to get joy from philanthropy? But one of the most poignant stories that I heard, it was a book, I didn't read the whole book. I was reading parts of it at one devotee's house. And then I ended up seeing a video interview with this woman. It was an Indian woman originally from India who lived in Singapore. And she subscribed to kind of an impersonalist Buddhist philosophy of life. Anyway, she got cancer, and she died from cancer. I mean, it spread all over her body, all of her organs shut down, all major organ failure, and she died, and then she came back to life. When she came back to life, she said that she had been in the Brahman. And she described it as being everyone. She said, I was everyone, and everyone was me. She said, if I wanted to know how someone felt, I was them. And so I could understand how they felt because I was them. And it was just so peaceful. It was so wonderful. She said, but then I realized that I couldn't have any relationships, because if I'm everyone and everyone's me, I can't have a relationship. She said, even though I understood that separate identity was completely illusory, I preferred it, because then I can have relationships. So I chose to come back in my body. Now, the reason that she sold so many books and that so many millions of people watched her videos is that when she came back in her body, within a few days, she was completely, totally, utterly healed. So she had gone from total organ shutdown to completely healed. And so people were much more interested in the medical miracle than in her spiritual realizations. The main focus was, you know, on freedom from disease. But I thought, this is exactly what Srila Prabhupada says. That if you realize Brahman, you're going to want to have relationships. She said, I prefer the illusory material relationships where I imagine that we have separate identities than to be in the Brahman. Just imagine that. So our understanding of ourself is as a person, where we do have, although this oneness is real, it is real, we also have a difference, where I'm different from Krishna, I'm different from the other devotees, I have my own eternal personality. And we start to invest in that identity. And in the beginning of our sadhana bhakti, that's going to be a very general thing, Jivara Swarupaya Krishna Nitya Dasha. I am a servant of Krishna. And we can focus this on the deities. I'm a servant of Radhalandaneshwar. I'm a servant of Jagannath. I'm a servant of Kamatai. I'm a servant of my guru. And we can start to identify in that way. And as we progress in Krishna consciousness, then we start to understand more specifically, who am I? Oh, I'm one of Krishna's cowherd boys. Oh, I'm one of Krishna's cows. I have some actual identity. And then we start to invest in that identity. And that is the science of Krishna consciousness. So as we're doing this as sadhakas, we should note, where do I invest my emotions? Where do I invest my security? Where do I invest my attention? Where do I invest my thoughts? Where do I invest my time? Where am I putting my money? Am I putting it into my bank account or somebody else's? What am I doing? And when the ever-changing, you know, physiological shifts, thought shifts, emotional shifts, opinion shifts that go through the body and mind, we should be standing on the shore, investing in our own self. Not taking these changes in the river very seriously. Sometimes the river is calm, sometimes there's waves. Sometimes there's rubbish floating in the river, sometimes there's swans floating in the river. Our temple in Dublin, as they say, it's right near a river, and there's swans in that river, wild swans. Sometimes there's swans in the river, sometimes there's trash in the river. So this constantly changing identity, sometimes it's influenced by sattva, sometimes by rajas, sometimes by tamas, sometimes by some combination of those. But it's not me. My life is not dependent on this ever-changing thing. And then I use the body and mind in terms of my identity, the way I would use a car. I take care of a car. Or a pair of shoes. Whatever it may be, that this is, it's Krishna's property, it's Krishna's energy, I use it in his service, but I don't take it very seriously. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements. Was just like,
yeah, I think the class is very profound. It's just like
you're all just shocked. Huh? Nobody has anything to say.
I think it just there's only time for reflection. question, no time for analysis.
Well, there is a point I was thinking of making that I didn't make, although it might be anticlimactic. Should I go for it?
Yes, please.
I thought of it and then it disappeared. With this shukshma, it was my god sister Narayani who pointed out to me that this word is used in relationship to the Tatenu Kampan verse. Everybody knows that verse? If you don't know that verse, it's something very important to learn. It's where Lord Brahma says that one who goes on tolerating the resultant action of their past misdeeds, offering more obeisances to the Lord through the whatever's going on in the world, that they inherit the kingdom of God because it's become their rightful claim. And in that section of Krishna book, Prabhupada quotes from the Bhagavatam, that, or maybe it's in the prayers of the personified Vedas. Okay, it's in one of those two places, I can't remember. It's either in chapter 14 or chapter 90 of Krishna book. I didn't think of that when I was preparing for the class. I didn't think of it until I saw the verse, so that's why it didn't end up in my class. Well, I don't remember which chapter it's in. But it says, the mercy bestowed upon the tested devotee is Brahman and Shukshma. Brahman, it's very big. Brahman means expansive, very big. And Shukshma is very fine. Like if we think of fine cloth, yeah? Fine jewelry. It's very fine. So this testing of the devotee is where we are not identifying with the ever-changing body and mind, where we don't let it affect us. We're just the observer of whatever's happening with the body and the mind. And we focus on our relationship with Krishna. And then not only is our identity very subtle, but the mercy that we get from the Lord is also very subtle and very great. So that was my other point that I forgot to make in the class. Anybody at all? Or is everybody really hungry this morning? I talked about food so much. You're all like, now you've just been meditating on eating, right? Yes. The microphone is on its way.
Thank you for the class. This is great philosophy we're giving right by Srila Prabhupada. And when you're talking about preaching, that first we should tell to people that we are not body, not about God. And always thinking, so they have experience of body, but they don't have like experience of the soul, right? So how? And what we are talking to them, it's like we promise a better life after death, and it sounds really religious, and for me it's a little confusing, so how to do it like, properly?
Okay, well, I don't know if I would accept that no one has experience of the soul. I think we all have experience of the soul all the time. We're just not understanding what our experience is. The fact that I can go, that each one of us can go through changing emotions and thoughts and physiological states, even within the space of an hour. Correct? Even within an hour, we can go from being tired to being alert, or from being hungry to being full, or from being happy to being angry, or to thinking about our plans for next week, to thinking about why that person just insulted me. And we all have that experience that we can go through these changes, and yet I have the same sense of identity. That I am the experiencer of those things. Everybody has that experience. They're just not understanding what they're experiencing. And I really hope we don't focus on, you know, this idea of life is miserable, but after death you'll go to Goloka. I hope we don't think like that. And I hope we don't preach like that. I'm sure some people do, but that is very unfortunate. Our concept is that we can connect with Krishna in this very moment. In fact, we're unlikely to go to Goloka at death if we've just been miserable our whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's if I become aware of Krishna. Like Krishna said, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Veti Tatvata Twarpade Hampun Arjanma Naiti Mam Eti Sorjuna. Now, if I know that Krishna's pastimes are transcendental, how am I going to be feeling? It's not just I know Krishna's pastimes are transcendental. Yes, they are. Yep, take it off on my Bhakti Shastra exam. Krishna's pastimes are transcendental. Yes. That's not what Krishna means. He means that I'm experiencing that Krishna's pastimes are transcendental. I'm experiencing that the deities are not just marble or wood or metal. I'm experiencing that Krishna is in every atom. I'm experiencing that Krishna is in the light of luminous objects. I'm experiencing that Krishna is in my heart. And therefore, death is lightning and illumination taking place simultaneously. One is hardly aware at death that one is dying. One is just the consciousness that one's cultivated in one's life for Krishna just simply expands. We're supposed to be aware of Krishna now. Or you could put it that we're supposed to be dying now. That's what sannyas is. Sannyas is to die. To die before dying. And we're all supposed to be sannyasis. Not that we all take dandas. But even if you have, a spouse and a family and a house, we're supposed to have this mood that everything bhoktiram yagatapasam sarvaloka maheshram subhidam sarvabhutanam gyatramam shanti richati. That Krishna is the enjoyer. We're supposed to die to the false ego. Yes? Am I right? Am I getting this right? Am I saying anything wrong? Did I get it right? So we're supposed to be dying at everything. We're supposed to be giving up this. What is death? What is death? We just read that in the previous verses. What is death and birth? It's just simply assuming a different flavor of false identity. And the reason we're afraid of death is not so much that we're afraid that we'll have some terrible disease that will be physiologically painful. It's not so much that we're worried about that, or physiologically embarrassing, that we'll be wearing diapers and we'll lose our memory and we'll be in pain. We worry about that because we see that happening to other people, even other devotees. So we do worry about that. But that's not our big anxiety about death. Our big anxiety about death is that I lose my investment. I've invested into this identity, and it's all going to be taken, Dr. Edith Best will be gone. Just gone, and very soon forgotten. That's what's worrying me, because that's where I put all my... So why don't we stop putting all our everything into that now? Then we die now. And then physiological death is no meaning. It just doesn't touch us at all. I've already died to that identity. That identity is already dead. What can death take away? What is death taking away? Nothing. Do you cry when you get out of a taxi? Because you didn't identify the taxi is mine. Now, if my car gets smashed, I cry, but not if the taxi gets smashed. It's just a taxi. It's not me. So we're supposed to be. We're experiencing joy at what does Prabhupada say? A thrill not just once, but at every moment. That's where we're supposed to be going. And we can give people a little experience of that right in the here and now, even materialistic people. I mean, I remember my first Sandesh. I always remember that. I was staying in the temple. I was underage. I was 17. And I stayed in the temple for 2 weeks without my parents' knowledge. They never knew that. Never found that out. Anyway, I was going, it was working. I had a job at the Museum of Science and Industry, and the devotees would, I'd go to the morning program, and then the devotees would pack me a lunch. And I was such a fired up devotee, I was going to work with Tilak on. I had to wear a uniform, but I would wear a garland. I'd wear a garland and Tilak. And 17-year-old enthusiasm. Anyway, so the devotees would pack me a lunch, and I remember when they packed me a lunch of a white flour puri covered with powdered sugar and something else, and a sandesh. So I ate the sandesh. I was like, what is this? What is this? And I had been a professional chef also. And I was like, how do you do that? And I came back to the temple and I said, what's in that? And they said, milk and sugar. I'm like, no. They said, well, a little lemon juice. And I thought, oh, maybe. I mean, Lord Chaitanya says this. He says that we're eating things that have, we can list the ingredients. I remember we'd visit my sister-in-law and I would cook when I was there. And she asked me, what's the recipe for rice? Just plain rice. What's the recipe? And then she wrote me. She said, you know, no matter how many times I follow your recipe, it doesn't taste the same. What are you putting in it? Or a story I like to tell was in Puerto Rico. We did a university program. And I was in the kitchen that morning. I used to cook for all the devotees. So, like the meal that you have here in the morning? How many cooks do you have to make that meal for all the devotees?
Two.
So I did alone. And it was served in Puerto Rico at 7:30. So I would have to make dal, rice, chapatis, sabji, salad, nectar, and halva by 7:30 in the morning for about 40 to 50 devotees. So I was in the kitchen in the morning, and there was another devotee making cookies or biscuits. I think some of you call them biscuits, but you know what cookies are, yeah? They're sweet, yeah? Okay, so she was making these cookies, so I watched her make them. Kama Gayatri is her name. And it was just flour, sodium bicarb, sugar, butter. Like the simplest possible cookies you could make. So we took those cookies that night to the university, and I gave a class, and after the class, people were getting the cookies. I didn't have one because I was answering questions from the professors and the students. So I didn't have one of those cookies. One of my biggest regrets in life, I didn't eat one of them. And about 40 people came up to me and said, what's the recipe for the cookies? And I'm like, flour and butter and sugar? So we do give people an experience that there's something beyond the material. We do. In our Harinam, There's a taste in Harinam that can't be explained by musical expertise. There's a taste in prasadam that can't be explained by the ingredients. There's a taste in the shastra that can't be explained by interesting stories and stimulating philosophy. There's a taste in seeing the deities that can't be explained by, oh, I'm looking at beautiful artwork like you go to the museum. We can't explain what we experience in Krishna consciousness. Maybe we don't experience it 24/7, but at least sometimes we can't explain it materially. It's something different. What's happening when we're having these experiences is that we, the soul, the senses of the soul, are contacting God. We're getting an authentic experience of ourself. So we can give people that experience. In fact, we try to do it all the time. We're not trying to sell these books because, you know, we're like some sort of missionary trying to convert people to our religion and make money for our society. I hope that's not why we're selling books. We're not, you know, selling and distributing prasadam just to get people to stop killing cows and make money for our temple. We're not going out on Harinam just because, you know, it's our version of a nice party. We're not reading the Bhagavatam just because it's highly intellectually stimulating and interesting on an emotional and intellectual level. We're doing it to taste God. That we, the soul, can taste God. And to give other people that opportunity to go, whoa, what was that? And if we're not regularly experiencing that in our practice of bhakti, then either we're not doing bhakti properly,
or we're offensive. One of those two choices. Prabhupada said, if you're eating and you're not getting nourished, either you're not really eating, like you're chewing gum, or there's parasites. So if we're engaging in the process of bhakti and we're not having frequently, whoa, there's Krishna, then either we're not doing bhakti, we're doing something else that looks like bhakti, but it's not, or we're offensive. That's stealing our stuff. Is that okay? Anybody else? If we eat all the prasadam that I've been talking about? Yes, Prabhu.
There's a question from Shyamananda in Radhadesh.
Oh. Hare Krishna, Shyamananda Prabhu from Radhadesh.
Says, I have never balanced the point we hear that the body is always changing, particularly every 7 years, but we see someone gets a tattoo which is just some ink in the surface of the skin, but it never goes away.
It certainly fades. You ever seen old people with tattoos, Shyamananda? Yeah, just... how you go, Shyamananda? Nice to have you with us. Just, go see some really old sailor. Look at the tattoo. It shifts and it changes. It's not the same. And I'm sure the people's feeling about the tattoo also changes. Just ask at any tattoo shop how many people come in to cover up the, you know, Sally tattoo on their arm. Well, therefore it's said here that it's very subtle, that this constant change is very subtle. And so therefore it's not that perceivable by a materially conditioned soul. But actually it's changing, not just every 7 years, but at every moment it's changing. Every moment it's changing. I mean, the comparison again here is to a candle or to a river. It looks like it's the same flame. It does. It looks like it's the same flame. Same candle, same flame. It looks like it's the same river. So on one hand it does look, but yeah, it's the same. But if you really think deeply about it, it's not the same. But that was a very good question. Thank you. Aren't you supposed to be listening to the class in Radhadesh?
I think because it's an hour difference.
Oh, that's right. All right, then okay. So then this must be your breakfast time.
Yes.
I hope we're not interrupting your breakfast. Enjoy the bread and butter and the porridge and the soup. And hopefully you're eating inside now. Sorry, I go to Radhadesh all the time. Anybody else? Yeah, that's nice with the time change. I had one point in my life where I was going to 3 morning programs, one in my locality and then 2 on the internet. I met one devotee who every morning went to Mangalartik in Mayapur but had never been there. Okay, so tomorrow... we're going to be looking at this topic. Today we looked at this topic in relationship to ourselves, and tomorrow we're going to be looking at the same topic, but in relationship to others. So this today was about how we perceive ourselves, and tomorrow is how we perceive others. Krishna willing. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.